Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider, brought to you as always by Taco Palenque. I am your host, Mike Finger, joined by our panel of Express News Spurs beat writers, Tom Orsborn and Jeff McDonald, along with Express News sports editor Nick Talbot. Our sponsor, Taco Palenque, they don't sugarcoat much. A lot of savory delights at Taco Palenque. We're not going to sugarcoat what just happened. We've got to start with the obvious question. There's no more denying it. If Victor Wembanyama cannot win the skills challenge, if he cannot get past the first round of the Rising Stars, do the Spurs just need to start over? Tom, I got to ask you. You were there in Indianapolis. What in the world happened at the Rising Stars Challenge and the Skills Challenge? Is this guy just not a winner?
It was kind of what we've seen all season at the Rising Stars game. He didn't get enough help.
Ah, that's a cop-out.
Skills Challenge again.
A true winner would have won the Rising Stars Challenge by himself.
And on Saturday night, you know, he had teammates who just wanted to have fun. And he threw some shade at him for that. He wasn't happy about it. Said
it is hilarious that we spend so much, not just us, but the whole NBA podcast media ecosystem we've talked about many times before. A big driver of all this is talking about the All-Star game, All-Star weekend for months and months, like we do every year. Get all upset about snubs, about people not making it. And it's just the biggest letdown, the biggest non-event from beginning to end. I mean, I think the most compelling thing, Tom, you were there, you can talk about it, but the most compelling thing of the whole weekend was Sabrina and Steph, right? Aside from that, I'm not sure much of that was memorable. But I'll let you defend it since you were there.
I had a really good pastrami sandwich at Shapiro's Delicatessen.
So we should have been talking about that for 3 months leading up to this, and not the Rising Stars team and the Skills Challenge and the All-Star game itself, which is just a disaster.
Yeah, Sabrina versus Steph, that was a lot of fun. And it was neat, in the press room, media room, when Sabrina started making shots right away, there was a reaction, I had no problem with this. There was, we all try to be objective and, no cheering in the press box, but the women reporters reacted initially, with some clapping, and then they caught themselves and they didn't do it from that point on, but I understood that completely. And so that was kind of neat to see, actually. And, for me, the best thing about this is listening to the guys when they're being asked serious questions, the press conferences at the All-Star game were, that's a good part. And Wemby didn't disappoint in that area, as he never does. His quote about, "I've been told never to skip steps my whole life, but it didn't stop me from running up the stairs." That was a good one. Then he talked to that same presser about wanting to be highly involved in decision-making down the road. So, those were good moments. But, yeah, I mean, the game, I don't know what needs to be done, but it's...
I got an idea. I know what we'll save.
Go ahead, Jeff. Yeah.
I know we'll save the All-Star game. I've got it here. If Adam Sandler or Adam Silver, either one of those guys wants to take this recommendation, one of these days, Victor Wembanyama is going to be in that game, and he's going to play it like it's Game 7 of the Finals, and that's going to be really funny to watch. Highly entertaining. Everyone else will be loafing around, and he'll be blocking shots to the moon, It'll be great. And he'll probably set the All-Star game record because Luka will throw him alley-oops all day long. So that will be fun.
Since there's not much, the Spurs have only played one game since our last podcast, we might as well talk about this here since every other NBA podcast in the world.
There are no other NBA podcasts in the world, baby. That's we're the true. Only one we're listening to. It's not been podcasted till we podcasted it, brought to you by Taco Palenque.
There you go. I think you do bring up a good point in that it's all at its very core, the problem with the All-Star game is like peer pressure or the fact that no one wants to be the only guy trying. Like if you're the one guy, in a way, the game also almost needs like a Jeremy Sohan type or a Victor Wembanyama who's going to take it really, really seriously. And maybe that spreads from player to player. Like they get so upset with Victor Wembanyama blocking their shots that they try blocking shots on the other end. And then the next thing you know, you have a competitive game. But the way it is now, like all from LeBron James to Kevin Durant to Steph on down the line, it's like no one wants to be the guy trying on defense. So no one's going to try on defense because it's frowned upon. And you can go back to the 90s. It's not like this game was good 10 years ago or 20 years ago. No. It's been bad a long, long time.
But it's gotten progressively worse. There's been a lot of old men yelling at clouds in the last few days. I mean, you know, some older scribes will say, NBA followers like want these guys like drawn and quartered for sullying the game and whatnot. I won't go that far, but this is as bad as it's ever been. Like even back in the 90s, players would goof around till the third quarter, and then in the fourth, some of that competitive instinct would kick in, and you'd see guys, you know, going at each other a little bit. You don't see any of that, and it's not even like bad defense. It's just like there's just people standing around. It's like a layup line. I mean, and sometimes we make that joke like in regular season games. Oh, it was like a layup line out there in the All-Star game. It like literally is. They just stand aside and watch each other do stuff. Like it seems pointless to me. And I was determined when I started this sentence or this part that I was not going to be old man yelling at clouds, but then I kind of turned into one.
You kind of always are an old man yelling at clouds, Jeff. Let's be honest. You're not wrong. The All-Star game was terrible. I mean, it's just not fun. It's not fun to watch, and it hasn't been in a long time. They've known it for a long time. They replaced it, with the two-ball challenge like 20 years ago? And they haven't fixed it since.
The Elam ending was good. They should have not gotten rid of that. Like, it gave some sort of down-the-stretch stakes or something. I don't know.
Saturday night wasn't great either. But that hasn't been great in a long time either.
No.
It's almost like everybody thinks it was better when they were younger, and generally they're right because it gets worse every year with some exceptions every now and then, like the Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, whenever that was not too long ago, was a pretty fun little dunk contest. But it's just all the dunks have been done. The dunk contests that we remember from our youth that were amazing, like if the guys tried the Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins dunks now, just be collective yawn. It's a problem without an obvious solution. And the Victor Wembanyama skills challenge thing, the reason why I yawned at that from the very beginning when it was announced he was in it is because that is the most boring, uncompelling event in a weekend full of them. Like Victor has so many skills and can do so many fun things, and it's just like asking, I mentioned on the terrible website, it's like asking Jackson Pollock to color in a coloring book and not go outside the lines. See, like that does not show anything about what Victor Wembanyama does, that skill challenge. It's ridiculous.
I just think for full disclosure, we need to just to make sure there's no conflict of interest here. Are you sure you're not upset with the skills challenge because it's sponsored by Taco Bell? And this podcast is sponsored by a competitor, far superior competitor, Taco Palenque. There's a conflict of interest there.
I don't even consider those two establishment's competitors. They're probably in a completely different class.
Well, sure.
Taco Bell, you only go to after two, like around 2 a.m. And outside of that, it has no use.
Why would any of us be up at 2 a.m.? Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. and especially at Taco Bell. That's what my mama always told me.
Yeah, it's just the weekend's nice to see, you know, the best players congregate, but I'm not sure there is a solution to make it great TV. And it's probably not for us. It's for the kids. Like 20 years from now, people, the you know, 40-year-olds, mid-30-year-olds will be talking about how great, how terrible the All-Star game is, how bad the skills competition is, and how much better it was back in
2024. Like, remember when defense was so good, they held them to 200?
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Back when the players cared, darn it.
Any other takeaways from your? I know you mentioned the pastrami sandwich, Tom. Any other takeaways from Indianapolis?
You know, like I said, Wimby acquitted himself well in the pressers, and you know, it was neat hearing at media day how much, you know, how many eyes are on him. We've heard it before from Giannis, but you know, 3 full minutes of talking about Wimby and how the league is going to be his if he stays healthy. That was something to hear. I mean, they really hold him in high esteem, not only just as a player, but, you know, just as a potential, you know, heir apparent to LeBron as the face of the league. So that was cool to see.
You've got to start winning. And yeah, we can, you know, that's not trenchant analysis or anything, but, that's just a transition into the second half. It's not really the second half mathematically, but the symbolic second half of the season following the All-Star break. The Spurs enter with a not great record, with a worse record than last year, bottom four record in the league. The second leg of the Rodeo road trip is coming up. The first leg ended since we spoke to you last in Dallas. Jeff was there. That went just about as expected, right, Jeff?
Yeah, sure. let's talk really about notable. Going forward. What do we have to look forward to over these next 27 games? You might ask, someone might write for the newspaper tomorrow.
Okay.
What might be worth watching over the next 27 games? Does anyone have any ideas?
Wimby wants them to go 12-15 and finish with a better record than they had last year.
That would be nice. I think that's going to be very difficult for them to do.
Absolutely.
And I think they're probably going to end up with the worst record in franchise history.
Yes.
Instead, the worst record in franchise history is 20-62, and they are currently 11-44. It's not looking great.
So they need 9 wins to tie.
And they if need they win 10, at the if they win at the
they need
same
10
clip
to avoid it. Go ahead.
If they win at the same clip that they have been winning, 20% of their games, they're going to finish with between 16 and 17 wins, somewhere in that area. It's not even that close. And on top of that, they have the second toughest remaining strength of schedule in the entire NBA. So I wouldn't, if you're thinking like, well, maybe, you know, maybe they lost a lot of games earlier, maybe they'll get it together and win at a better rate down the stretch. They're facing the second toughest remaining schedule in the NBA. So I don't know.
They've already got
through their soft part of the schedule and they've got 11 wins. So
here's the number for the group. I will present it to the group. 17.5. Jeff McDonald, more than that or over or under wins for the season? That would be 6.5 wins the rest of the way.
You're good at this because I don't know. I will read you the list of opponents they have remaining with a losing record. So 27 games to go. I think it's 9 games against teams with a losing record. So it's Utah, Houston twice, Brooklyn, Memphis twice, Utah again, and Detroit. So you're asking how many of those can they win, basically. And I don't know.
They might pull off a shocker somewhere.
Possibly. 3 games left against the Nuggets, man. Like, they haven't even played the champs but once.
A homestand against the team they own.
That's true.
The Phoenix Suns.
That's true.
Anyway, 17 and a half, over under.
How does Victor getting more minutes factor into all this?
I'm waiting for Jeff's answer first.
Under. Oh, sorry. I'm going to say under.
Under 17 and a half.
That seems the conservative way to go.
Now, Tom, you can do your little soliloquy here. You can talk about Victor's minutes thing, and then you can conclude with a decision on either over or under. I open the floor to you.
Yeah, Pop said in Dallas he's going to increasingly get more minutes, you know, after being on the minutes restriction for lo these many months. I'm gonna go over.
Over.
Yeah.
Nick Talbot.
I'm over. Always the optimist. I gotta think it's under. I don't even know if he'll get a lot more minutes, because if you get the doors blown off you, like they do a lot of the times, then it's hard to get 34 minutes a game. And he's sitting there for 25 instead. And all those games against the Nuggets, that might happen. So I'm going under. 16 is probably about right. They'll upset someone we don't expect them to beat. They'll beat the Pistons at the end of the season. They'll probably beat Memphis. Maybe get one against Utah. We're asking a lot to get anything past 16, I think.
I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Andrew Lopez, in, I think we were in Brooklyn, about this a couple weeks ago. And he was talking about, Jeff, you were there. I think it was a game either. It was in Florida. I think it was Orlando. It might have been. It was Orlando, where Victor had gotten sort of shaken up. And it was at the end of a blowout. It was in the second half of a blowout. And he had gone down into the tunnel to work something out physically. And there's like a couple of minutes left in a game where the Spurs are losing by 20 something. And Victor asks back in because he wants to play. And I think he did get back in, or I'm not.
He did not get back in.
He did not get back in, but he wanted to get back in.
Yeah.
And the gist of this is, you know, Nick just mentioned how like he's not going to play the end of blowouts. In a season like this, it's almost like the score is irrelevant at all times, because they're going to lose anyway. And if he wants to get his minutes in, like, no one is. What is the difference between him getting hurt in the last 2 minutes of a blowout or the first 2 minutes of a blowout? It's almost like the rules of when you play guys.
Or a victory.
Don't even apply. Like, or a victory. Right. The score and the time are almost irrelevant to him getting his minutes in. So, you know, in the course of a normal season, what Nick just said might make sense. Like, he's not going to play his 30th minute when they're down by 30 in the fourth quarter. But like the score doesn't matter anymore. So if he goes his 30 minutes, what's the difference between him playing that in a competitive game and in the at the end of a blowout? Because all of them are that way.
Probably just perception if he does get hurt. Right. I mean, you're like, why did you have that guy in there, you know, down by 30?
Right. But why do you have him play? If that's the question, I know some people outside might ask that. Let's say he blows out a knee with 2 minutes left and the Spurs are trailing by 25 points. But like, if your question is, why is he playing at a meaningless moment? Well, the rest of the season are meaningless moments. You know, it's not like they're competing for anything. So my sort of preemptive argument for how you get his minutes in is you just get him in. It doesn't matter if they're getting blown out or not.
And on that subject, I don't think he's going to average 35 the rest of the way. I don't think that was the idea. I think he could probably get up over 30. And to be honest, to this point, he's averaged in 49 games, he's averaged 28.4. So it's not a big jump for him to average over 30 the rest of the way. But I think averaging 35. And in fact, the question Pop was answering that day in Dallas, I think someone asked, do you see him being a 35 minute a night player? And Pop kind of said, I don't want to put that number on it, but we're probably going to get him more minutes as we come back from the break.
That's another just part of modern media that gets kind of silly, is you know, stuff like that, where it everything becomes a grand pronouncement and a big news item. And it's just Pop kind of saying, yeah, he'll play more as the season goes on, like a lot of people do. But because it's Victor Wembanyama, it turns into, you know, Pop says that his numbers are going to go up, and they sort of have been already. So,
we need engagement. So
that's true.
We frame that in the most you know, proclamation-y way possible.
Proclamation. Using words like that are good for engagement, I think.
They really are.
Yeah.
You get engaged by the dictionary, Oxford Dictionary, and they tell you that's not a word, dummy.
We're recording this on Tuesday, as usual. This will hit your earbuds on Wednesday, and when it does, I think Jeff McDonald will be Pacific bound. Is that right? You're out there to start this road trip.
When this hits your earbuds, I'll probably be somewhere over like the Arizona desert on the way to Sacramento.
So we got Sacramento on Thursday, a back to back the next day against the Los Angeles Lakers at crypto.com arena. And then at Utah, at Minnesota, we'll break this. We talked about the second half as a whole. That's a four-game end of the rodeo road trip trek. How are our local cagers primed to hit that stretch?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I think we talked about it last time, but it's not looking great. Like maybe they got a puncher's chance in that Utah game, but do you really see them it being anything more than some whitewashing? And the other ones, like, I know they've beaten the Lakers already this year and played them tough, but it's the second night of a back-to-back, and the Lakers are in a better spot than they were when the Spurs played them earlier in the season. Sacramento, which is a funny thing to say. Sacramento, and Minnesota. You know, you're not beating those two teams. So
this will be the first... This will be the first Victor game at the Lakers. He was at Crypto against the Clippers earlier this year, but that'll be, you know, the lights are different there. They it seems like a bigger deal when it's the
Lakers.
Wonder
if he'll get to meet Lawrence Tanter.
He might. The voice of crypto.com. Is he still there, actually?
I assume.
Yeah.
What do I know? I'm not the Lakers beat writer, right?
He tends to play up to the big stage. The All-Star stuff was, as Tom mentioned, kind of he didn't get much help in the Rising Stars. That was a shocker. G League team beat him. The guys with him on the skills challenge weren't totally aware of the rules. They weren't totally aware. Like, the rules are dumb anyway. Like in the passing thing, there's 6-point passes and 4-point passes and 2-point passes, and no one until the very end, whichever team won it, I think it was in the Pacers team, just start making nothing but 6-point. Like, why don't you just do that all the time? I don't think these rules are totally completely thought through. But anyway, my point was that Victor tends to play up to the moment when he has some help. So maybe he'll be motivated for that Lakers game.
So like in 2028, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Tom, did you see Victor hanging with Trae Young there on the sidelines?
Hey, he was chatting with Trae, smiling, having a good time.
Seems like
read into it what you want.
Trae seemed to enjoy his company.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who doesn't enjoy Victor's company?
That's a good point.
I think it would have been bigger news if they like came to blows on the sideline. There were fisticuffs.
Yeah,
that would be a bigger story.
No more brawls, please.
Than them talking and laughing. No more brawls. This isn't the Incarnate Word insider, right?
Yeah. Hey,
no.
Wow.
It is not. Yeah, that's what's different about this. There's many things different about this Spurs year, obviously. But the Spurs have generally not been that team where just a shot on the sideline like that creates buzz nationwide. Like no one was going crazy on the Facebook or on the what was the one before that,
MySpace.
No one was going crazy on MySpace when like Tim Duncan was spotted chatting with Allen Iverson at the All-Star game. But in this modern era, in this Victor Wembanyama era, if Victor Wembanyama and Trae Young are sitting within close proximity and there's smiles on both faces, well, that can lead to all kinds of aggregation and speculation and whatnot. There, yeah. And, you know, it's fun to think about something like that. I think something like that is in the future somewhere. Maybe not this offseason. Maybe not that guy. But eventually, you know, I've written this before. We've all talked about it. There's going to be another player like that, superstar type, that the Spurs are going to target at some point. And it's sort of fun to think about a Trae Young, Victor Wembanyama pick and roll. Like, I'm not sure Big Trae is the perfect future Spur, but you can see some entertaining possibilities there.
The Spurs really needed that all to go south in Dallas so they can make a run at Luka.
Wow.
That's what they really needed, but I think it seems like happy times in Mavericks land right now.
Yeah. Anybody else that you that's just off the top of your head that could be somebody that they could pounce upon? The whole appeal of the whole reason that Trae is mentioned is because things are going south in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of guy you're going to target eventually, right? Yeah. Is a you know, they're not going to, yeah. It's a team that has to deal them,
right?
Deal whoever your star is. You're basically looking at the reverse of the Kawhi situation from several years ago, and the Spurs are waiting to pounce on one of those.
Yeah,
and who's that going to be? I don't know.
Not I don't see. Donovan Mitchell.
No, probably not.
Yeah. Anyway, we're petering out here. We've had it's the break. It's the break. We got to get our game legs back, just like the local caterers are going to have to when they make it to Sacramento on Thursday. They will have had 8 days off. You know, you can't just step back on the floor and be where you were before, just like this podcast has proven, right?
I mean, you can if you're a true professional.
Well,
this is a time of year, you know, you kind of take care of things you need to take care of, you know, medical things and, you know, maintenance type things. It's a break.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Yeah. I'm sure the Spurs have done that. Maybe some of them have been refreshed on their time off. What did Jeremy say? Where did Jeremy say he was going after he left the Rising Stars, Tom? He was going to go.
Going to go walk with Otto in the King William area.
Is that right?
Yeah, his dog.
What kind of dog is Otto?
German Pointer.
A German Pointer.
Yes.
So if anyone has been hanging down in the King William area in San Antonio, which is a very nice area, and they see a German Pointer. I guess the German Pointer wouldn't stand out as much as the 6'8" dude with blonde hair would stand out, but might offer them a little encouragement.
Yeah.
Do people not go to Cabo anymore? Has that become like blasé or passé?
I think some people do.
You know, it used to be Cancun. That was the whole thing, the 1-2-3 Cancun back in the day. None of those guys would be caught dead in Cancun anymore.
Yeah, from Cabo's past it.
Cabo, and I'm wondering if Cabo is a new Cancun and they're somewhere else.
Well, our old friend LaMarcus Aldridge was a regular
Cabo, yeah.
All-star break Cabo.
I will volunteer this summer to do a story on all the places NBA players like to vacation. I'll jump from place to place, and then maybe it'll be like a travel review, but I'll volunteer for that one.
Talk to the locals about whether they've ever seen LaMarcus Aldridge or Jeremy Sohan or whatever. See, that's the other thing. Well, I guess it would be legal for our 20-year-olds to go down to Mexico and partake in the local festivities. I don't know. But my point is that the Spurs are so young. I don't know if they go on these trips.
Maybe they go down to Acuna, you know, they could just take a quick drive.
Maybe so. But they'll be back on the court Thursday, February 22nd at Sacramento, trying to prevent the Kings from lighting the beam, as they say. Jeff McDonald will be there along for the ride. on the West Coast swing. They will be back in our hometown of San Antonio next Thursday. We'll talk to you before then. But the Chet Holmgren and the Oklahoma City Thunder will be there to greet them on their return from the rodeo road trip. We'll see if there's any more victories to talk about, if they're getting closer to Victor's goal of passing last season's record. It's a tall order, but hope springs eternal here at the All-Star break. With the local Cagers, with our listeners, we hope to see you and hear you and have you along next week. Until then, take care of each other and keep it real.